Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey Carris and I'm here with Annie Waters. Hi, Annie.
Hello.
And this week we've been reading The Erratics by Vicky Lavoe Harvey. But first, some book news, and we're back into the awards, Annie.
It's never ending. The awards season is well and truly underway.
And this doesn't feel like news hot off the press now because it's been a week or two, but the Women's Prize shortlist has been announced.
Yes.
And we were wildly wrong again, although we've picked a few winners.
Yeah. I think I'm not surprised by lots of them, but there are definitely some omissions that I thought would make it on. Anyway, so the shortlist
we
of
have
titles
to talk about
are The Silence of the Girls by Pat Barker, My Sister the Serial Killer by Owen Ken Braithwaite, Milkman by Anna Burns, Ordinary People by Diana Evans, An American Marriage by Tayari Jones, and Circe by Madeline Miller. So I'm very excited that I've read five out of those six.
I know. Well done us.
But where's Normal People?
Oh, yeah.
Where is it? Dropped off the Booker, dropped off this.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah, I think the one that surprised me the most, as in omissions, was Ghost Wall by Sarah Moss, which we read recently because I just thought that was the perfect small novel and there was so much going on in that book for such a short book. But it was interesting. I was speaking with Simon Savage in London. I caught up with him last week and he said, well, it might just be what we forget is that the judges have to read these books two or three times and perhaps because it's so short, it didn't bear up to reading a second or third time. I don't know
about that though. I've read it twice and I thought it was atmospheric and powerful. And I think it's almost a book you need to read a couple of times because it is so small, you can just miss little things. But
so the controversy over that might continue. But Normal People as well, I thought I tipped that to be in the shortlist, partly because of the one of the criteria is accessibility. And I thought that really ticks a lot of those boxes of being, you know, obviously a beautifully crafted novel, but also accessible that you could recommend to just about anyone.
Yeah, it just feels like it's one of those books that's being talked about by absolutely everyone.
Yeah.
And isn't making it into the awards that I think it should be.
Do you think they take into account that it has already had so much attention and publicity that it doesn't need that boost of being in the shortlist?
Because I don't think that's the point of a prize. That's a corollary.
Yeah, no, it shouldn't be a factor.
Yeah, I think you give the prize to the best book. And
yeah, that's right. But no, it is a commercial list in the sense of books that have a wide commercial appeal, I think. And probably one surprise was My Sister the Serial Killer. And I only say that because I thought it was such a fun read and an easier read than, let's say, Milkman, just within the list to compare them, that I thought perhaps it would be considered too light for the Women's Prize, and yet there is a lot going on in that book.
Oh, absolutely.
There's more than meets the eye, and I'm so excited that it's on the shortlist. So that was probably – and that has had, I suppose, a bit of backlash from people who loved Ghost Wall and said, how does that –
Really? See, I think that's a no-brainer for me. I think the ones – well, I mean, obviously I would boot Ordinary People because I haven't read it. So, you know, that's an easy no from
that
me.
You want the normal people, not the ordinary people.
Exactly. But the other one was The Silence of the Girls because I think if you're going to have Circe and Silence of the Girls on this list, Circe is just such a better book about similar themes. I don't know. Maybe it's because it is a British prize and The Silence of the Girls is such a British book that perhaps it has a bit more of that working class kind of sympathy there. But those two for me are the same book, but one is a lot better.
It is interesting. There's two Greek myth retellings. So I enjoyed them both equally, but in very different ways. They're different styles. The Circe's more generous American sort of lush prose, and The Silence of the Girls is quite dry and clear and crisp. But I thought The Silence of the Girls came together more as a novel and as a story with a beginning, a middle and an end and had that satisfying coherence and completeness, whereas Circe was more episodic. There is an arc. We talked about this, I think, at the time. There is a narrative arc, but it is a bit – there's not as much dramatic tension of what will happen next.
I think that Circe has more heart and more warmth. That's what stayed with me, whereas the story of Troy just felt – a bit like a retelling, and I didn't.
Yeah.
It didn't add to the story in that way.
Yeah. Mm. Well, I'm sure the judges are having all these debates.
They should just call us.
Yeah. We'd love to be a fly on the wall. We'll have a think about this and maybe come up with our tip. We've already tipped some that didn't
make
it. Yeah,
no, I feel bad tipping someone now.
Yeah.
You're the jinx. I think for me, though, yeah, I don't know. It would be hard for me to pick a winner out of these.
Yeah.
They're all so different.
Well, I think that's right. They're all different and they're all really good in different ways. Mm. So how do you pick a winner? And then just briefly, the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards were announced on this, I think, the same day. Just a couple from those awards. One, which is the Book of the Year and the Douglas Stewart Prize for Nonfiction, which it shared with The Trauma Cleaner by Sarah Krasnostein, which I absolutely loved and highly recommend, is a book called Deep Time Dreaming by Billy Griffiths.
Mm.
So we might add that to our list at some stage. And that's a telling of the history of Australia using archaeology.
Yeah, he's an academic and researcher at Uni of New South Wales and, yeah, has kind of used archaeology to, I guess, supplement and verify lots of stories that have been told by Indigenous people in this country for a long time, and he's kind of giving a bit more academic weight to that.
Yeah, so that'll be really interesting. Mm. And the special award went to No Friend But the Mountains by Behrouz Bouchani, which is his writing from Manus Island prison. He came as an asylum seeker wanting to reach Australia and was detained there for 5 years before the prison was closed down, but is still really captive on Manus Island.
Mm.
And he won the Victorian Premier's Literary Award for that book, which I've read recently and is a really harrowing, confronting read, but very important. And I think we'll do it. Amanda and I might do it on the podcast. So stay tuned for that one. And good to see that winning awards and recognition. And then the Multicultural Award went to The Lebs by Michael Muhammad Ahmad, which was interesting. I've seen that around, but I haven't read it. But
He's a Sydney-based writer. He's an artist, I think, as well.
Mm. And one that Annie and I liked, the New South Wales Premier's Prize for Translation went to Alison Entrican, who translates from Portuguese into English, and we read her translation of The End by Fernanda Torres and loved that.
I hadn't realised she was Australian.
No, I don't think I had either.
I just assumed she was British or, from the other side of the pond. But
the holes in our research that we do about these books.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that there's – I don't know. The thing that I like about all these prizes
is she Australian?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Well, this is an Australian award.
Yes.
Yeah, and so that's why they had to make a special category for Behrouz, because he's not currently a citizen.
Yeah.
I really like that all these prizes are really lucrative. And I think for someone like a translator, $30,000 is a year's worth of – work that you can do, it means so much productivity and space for you to write, which I think is just such a blessing.
Yeah. And then, no surprises, the award for new writing as well as the People's Choice Award went to
Trent Dalton with Boy Swallows Universe.
So we're very happy with that. We read that for listeners who might not have heard our review of that book. That was episode 28.
Mm.
So you can go and take a listen to us raving on about Boy Swallows Universe. And now on to our book of the week, The Erratics by Vicky Lavoe Harvey. And this, a friend in Sydney recommended a couple of months ago that I read this book. And we were talking about the Stella Prize shortlist. It must have been shortlisted by that time, and I hadn't heard of it. And she said, this is the real deal. Vicky Lavoe Harvey's amazing. And I was really glad she did, because I then went and bought it and read it and loved it. And then it won the Stella Prize. So Annie and I thought we'd do it for the podcast. Vicky Lavoe Harvey is a Canadian author, but she lives in Sydney. So we're claiming her as Australian now. And she does have, I think, three passports, because she also has spent a lot of time working in France, and she has worked as a translator and a business editor, although she says her specialty is really 18th century French literature. So she's very accomplished and has won awards for her short stories and poetry. But this is her first published book. So she was first published in her 70s, which is inspiring. And it's a memoir, and it won the Finch Memoir Prize in 2018. And as I mentioned, has just won the Stella Prize for Australian Women's Writing in 2019. And it's the story of her travelling back to Canada when her elderly parents are sick, and in particular her mother is hospitalised. So Vicky, who's estranged from her parents and hasn't seen them other than one other trip 3 years before, travels back and then meets up with her sister who lives in Vancouver, and they travel to Calgary where her parents live. And her mother has broken her hip, so she's in hospital, and they go and help look after their father. But there's a twist to this in that their father, when they find him, has been basically isolated in the family home, which is a rural property, and he's emaciated. So he has been sort of semi-starved by their mother, and he's been given all sorts of medication. And their mother has been sort of doing this, and so what they are trying to achieve is get their mother analysed by a psychologist or a psychiatrist and diagnosed with something that,
some kind of personality disorder.
They're sort of suspecting a personality disorder, but they need that to be diagnosed so that she can be admitted to care and so that they can sort of rescue their father, basically. So they're using the time while she's in hospital to try to sort that out. So it's a really interesting family dynamic, to say the least. And it goes on from there, and Vicky Lavoe-Harvey, so she tells that story, and then she does reflect back on her upbringing and her childhood and how it has come to this, and it explores her relationship with each of her parents and with her sister. And she and her sister have been traumatized by their upbringing with their mother, and it's a very nuanced and beautiful portrait of that relationship, I think. And so whilst it's quite a unique, well, it is a unique story, I think it has a wider resonance in that it's a story of family, it's caring for aging parents, and there's a lot in there that I think a lot of people will relate to, even though the circumstances sound quite bizarre, and all told with a sort of dark sense of humour. So I absolutely loved this. What did you think, Annie?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I think we've read several memoirs recently that have similar maybe themes or similar kind of mood to them. So I'm thinking of 100 Years of Dirt by Rick Morton or Educated by Tara Westover, you know, the kind of stories of a family in dire circumstances for whatever reason that is isolated and struggles. But this, I think, was really warm and brought home that Tolstoy quote that every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way.
Yes.
Because this family, I guess, is deeply scarred. You don't get much of the action about what actually happened to form. I kept wanting to know more about the mother and why she was the way she was, but I think Vicky isn't interested in that, or that's not what this book is about necessarily.
I don't think she's not interested. I think she has probably carefully chosen to tell the story she's able to tell, and there's probably a lot that has been suppressed or repressed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Either consciously or unconsciously.
But I think she's very careful not to pathologize her mother. She doesn't want to present her as a case. She wants to present her as her mother.
That's
and
right.
And try and more so focus on the situation that they're dealing with, which is their father's kind of slide into emaciation and kind of helplessness.
That's right.
And try and deal with that, which I think reflects a lot about her as a person. I really liked the person that shone through. She's very practical. She's no nonsense.
Yeah.
She's quite she and her sister both quite have a brusque sense of humour.
Yeah.
That, as you say, verges on the darker side.
They're real survivors, aren't they?
They are. They absolutely are.
But I agree with you that it's a very beautiful portrait of her mother, despite the fact her mother does come across as quite a diabolical character, mm-hmm. and she does give full force to that that sense of comedy that comes with it, and we can give some examples. But it is definitely a portrayal of her as a mother and not as a case.
Not bitter necessarily, no, whereas I think the sister probably is a bit, holds on to a bit more of that anger. Yeah. But the natural world is so beautifully evoked in this as well. You know, it is so steeped in that Canadian Rocky Mountains kind of setting. Even the title is taken from some boulders that I think as part of a Indigenous story there roll down and then come to rest, and they're called the Erratics.
That's right.
It's just the way that she links landscape and family.
Well, she spoke quite movingly. She had an interview with Richard Feidler on Conversations, which he replayed recently after the book won the Stella Prize. And she spoke quite movingly about that notion of home, and she has that strong connection with the landscape. Mm. And at the same time, it's so fraught because of really she had to move away from her home to overcome the trauma of that upbringing. So it's a paradox for her. But she said no matter how much she loves Australia, and she absolutely loves living in Australia, she lives in Sydney, but she said the animals are not her animals. So the spiders and the snakes and so on, she finds really frightening. Whereas in Canada, where she's from, there are all sorts of dangerous animals, but they're just her, they're her animals. You know, she's okay with that. So she has this real comfort in the landscape there that she'll never have anywhere else, in a sense. That it was really interesting, that notion of home. But no, I just loved it.
What do you think about the – so she doesn't use any names really in the story. So her sister, her mother, her father, none of them really get given names. She always refers to them as their role in her life, which I think is probably a deliberate distancing and protection of the people that are still alive.
I assume
alive.
It's just to protect their anonymity. Yeah.
But I also found it really interesting because I think it, in the same way that Milkman does, it makes it a more general story. Even though it is her specific story, I found things, especially with her sister and then her sister's partner, that, you know, had resonances with the way my sister and I interact. We're quite different, but obviously have had a very similar upbringing. And
isn't that interesting? Because I hadn't noticed that she didn't name them. But you're right, it does leave it then open to you to put your own
kind of understanding.
It could also be a reflection of her having had to create a distance between herself and her family to survive and to overcome that trauma. And she, there's a line where she says she lives as far away as possible from where she grew up, and she knows why that is and how much it has cost for her to get there. And that's a very telling line. And she doesn't, there's not a lot in the book about her saying, oh, I'm so traumatized, or she doesn't weigh it down at all with that, but there's just enough to glimpse that it has affected her. And I really liked the way she did that with a light touch, but you get a sense of it. She doesn't run away from it, if you know
what
I mean.
Well, she and her sister have reacted in very different ways to their childhood. So she, her sister holds on to everything and remembers everything, whereas she has forgotten, and she's talking at one point about there being massive gaps in her memory. And she says, where there is nothing, there must have been pain. And forgetting is a solace or something like that. And it's beautiful, but it's heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. And I wonder if she has that mother and father and sister is – partly just trying to keep
telling a story
sort of
to herself,
a distance,
maybe,
or just keep them at arm's length a little bit. Not, I don't know. That could be too much reading into it.
Yeah, I think one of the other big questions that the book raised for me was, what is your responsibility to people that you love? Because I think that's at the heart of what they're trying. They're trying to make their mother comfortable, and they're trying to keep their father safe. And the two are not mutually exclusive, but I don't think that – well, it's got to the point where they can't live together anymore, even though the mother still desperately wants to live in this house. And I think Vicky responds to that. She's a lot more detached from it and just says, well, this is what has to happen.
Pragmatic.
Whereas the sister is a lot more emotionally invested, and perhaps because she lives closer and has been more involved and wants something back from their mother that she's just not going to be able to give.
Yeah.
I think at what point do you cut off that responsibility or cut off yourself from your family, even if they've treated you despicably?
I know. Yeah, it is. It's really interesting because you see the dysfunctional upbringing that she's had, and yet she still feels bound to her parents and she still has the obligation to them. It is interesting in that context that you'd still feel like, okay, we're going to sort out the house. Mm. We're still going to, even though the parents have disowned them.
I get the sense that though that obligation. It was always the mother. She seems like a super controlling, very charismatic, very manipulative personality.
Yeah.
Like when she gets into the hospital, you know, the doctors and nurses, Vicky and her sister are trying to say, all right, we have said this all along. She is crazy.
Yeah.
And we need to finally someone will believe us.
But they don't believe the doctor's daughters.
Because she's told them all these different stories, either that she has no children at all or that she had six children and they all died or that none of them love her and they're all just money grabbing.
Yeah.
And so
it's amazing. No one knows
what to believe.
You do get a real sense of how charismatic their mother is. And I love that Vicky Lavoe-Harvey almost has there's a sense of admiration for her mother in that, you know, she's quite diabolical, but she's really something, you know, she's a force of nature.
Oh, yeah.
And she does have a sort of grudging admiration for that. And there's a wonderful part where finally a psychiatrist interviews their mother, but he sort of is equivocal in his report and he says, well, there are these things and that. And then he finishes the report by saying he really enjoyed interviewing her.
Like, you can tell that she just had him wrapped around her little finger.
And there are lots of examples like that, which Vicky Lavoe-Harvey, I just love that sense of humour that she brings to it, and the fact that you can tell that she is sort of shaking her head as she reads this.
I think my favourite one is where she gets a call from an old friend and the friend says, I'm so sorry for your loss. And she says, what are you talking about? And the friend says, oh, well, you know, your mother, she's not here anymore. She said, of course, she's fine. What's going on? Someone would have told me.
Yeah.
And it transpires that her mother had accepted two teaching placements at different universities on the other side of the country.
Yeah.
And had, instead of telling one of them that she couldn't do it, she sent the HR department a letter from ostensibly from her husband saying that she'd passed away. And then they sent back a condolence notice, which she kind of secreted away, but they printed an obituary in the newsletter of the university. And so all of these people are calling Vicky and saying, I'm so sorry for your loss. And she's like, she's not dead.
Yeah, she's fine. It was so good. Yeah, I loved the humour. And then there was a bit where they're trying to get her mother admitted into an aged care home, and she was being pressured by the manager of the home to take up this room. And the manager said, you know, this opportunity might not come up again. And Vicky Lavoe-Harvey says, well, we knew that wasn't true.
You know, no one comes here for life.
That a room would become available, and it's just the nature of the place. So it's just it's a very sort of dark humour, I loved it. And I found her as a narrator, someone, you know, was just great company.
Yeah.
So that really shone through for me as
it's
well.
It's a very human book, I think. You know, it's about all the crap that you don't want to talk about, but that everyone's going to have to go through in one way or another, you know, parents passing away or having to clear out a house full of a lifetime's worth of rubbish and just accumulated things.
Sort of an extreme version of all of that, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah. With this kind of crazy undercurrent running through it. But I think the basic facts are very relatable, as you say.
Yeah. No, it's a really, really excellent read. So we're recommending that. That's The Erratics by Vicky Lavoe-Harvey. And next week, Amanda and I will be reading The Van Apfel Girls by Felicity McLean. And then Annie will be back with Gingerbread by Helen Oyeyemi.
Yes.
And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Litzy, Twitter and Instagram at A. Bailey Karras. And Annie?
I'm on Litzy, Twitter and Instagram at Mr. _Annie.
Fantastic. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.
Thanks. Bye.